Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Snaresbrook, come in, Snaresbrook. Are you receiving me?
I'm receiving you. Hello.
We are still recording separately, but this week it's Annabelle who's in the plague house.
I am in plague house, yeah. My son's got COVID.
Have you put him in a bubble?
Yeah, what I've done is I put him in his bedroom, opened the window wide, and then locked the door. Not seen him for a few days. Joking. No, I can't isolate a child. It's really annoying.
I know. I bet it is.
So I just had to spend all day breathing it in and waiting to get it myself. It's terrible.
How often are you testing?
Oh, just daily.
That's very restrained of you.
Do you think I should be doing twice a day?
I feel like you're one of these people who's testing daily under normal circumstances.
No, twice a week under normal circumstances. Okay. So just daily.
I am out of isolation. I got out on Sunday. I celebrated by going ice skating. And when Annabelle and I just started this call before we started recording, I was singing Laura Branigan's Gloria. Because it's just stuck in my head now. Because whenever I think about ice skating, I think about that scene from Flashdance, which is set to that song. And now it's just going round and round and round and round and driving me to the point of insanity. But it's just like a local leisure centre near us has an ice rink in it, and I had no idea.
I'm surprised. I thought it was just something that opened, like popped up, like a pop-up, isn't it? A Christmas pop-up.
It wasn't one of those, no. Mm. I am very rigid on ice skates.
I'm entirely unsurprised.
The last time I went ice skating, I think, was about 7 or 8 years ago on one of those Christmassy pop-up outdoor ones. And I remember not being able to move. It was like that bit in The Wizard of Oz where the Tin Man's going, "Oil can."
Was that before or after your audition to be on Dancing on Ice?
It was after. I think that's what knocked my confidence.
They approached you, I hasten to add. You didn't like turn up to an open audition for Dancing on Ice, no.
Do you ever think about how strange that was?
A lot. No, not a lot, no, but maybe annually, whenever that show comes back on the telly.
Why did they ask me?
I don't know. I don't know. You were doing a breakfast show at the time.
No, we were doing the Jeff show at the time.
You're joking.
So we did a late night show.
Oh, wow. I'm even more confused.
It's really odd, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess maybe someone was a fan and they thought, correctly, that you'd be terrible and it'd be funny. And that was why. But maybe you were better than they thought and that's why you didn't pass the audition.
No, this is my theory on it. I think with any of these things, there's a level of bad where it's funny. And then beneath that, there's a level of bad where it's unworkable.
Because you can't do anything apart from, like, scatter about.
Yeah. Well, I can't even scatter. I think I would have been so... I don't remember much about it. I had to go to Alexander Palace Ice Rink in London with a producer and a researcher with a video camera. And we went round the rink a few times whilst they asked me some questions. And I remember being kids pointing at me and laughing.
Yeah, that's quite a low level then. Yeah.
I also remember not having a spoon that when we were in the cafe beforehand and we were having the pre-chat, not having a spoon to take the tea bag out of my tea. and doing it with my fingers and then being really horrified at watching me squeeze a tea bag with my fingers, like it was the beginning of Kung Fu, where he's, you know, holding the boiling pot between his arms.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was that. That was an odd chapter, an odd chapter. But there was on Sunday at this leisure centre ice rink. So it's basically a bunch of useless people like me and families going round and some slightly better. And then in the middle, there was what looked like an Olympian, this young woman doing spins and twirls. And what I couldn't tell is if actually she was at a reasonably basic level for somebody who could ice skate. And just compared to everybody else, she looked like a professional.
Yes. I think it's actually, yeah, that there's a step up for a beginner where it's really hard to tell, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea. Like she's spinning round and round.
If someone goes backwards, that's enough for me. I think they might be professional.
Oh, Sarah can go backwards.
She cannot.
Because Sarah was dragging Jean around. She was going backwards, dragging Jean around, and I was following slowly, holding onto the sides.
Does she have lessons? How can she go backwards?
I think she used to go ice skating as a kid, but I don't think she ever had lessons. I don't know how she it was wow. Remarkable. It was something to behold. There was nothing graceful about it, but, you know, she's...
Did it make you love her more or less?
Every day I love her more.
Of course, so of
just
course.
Just by how default, just because time was moving forward.
Yes, of course,
I was
course.
Loving her more. Mm. Yeah, and then I was thinking about this... ice ballerina or whatever you would call her. I couldn't work out if it was annoying or not.
Why would it be annoying?
Because it was showing off. So either...
She was just skating. That's not showing off, is it? What's she supposed to do? She can't do it at home. She can't practice at home. She can only practice in public.
Come on now. Come on, right? Mm. So either... She's an Olympian and she has to put in those hours and it doesn't matter if there's 50 families moving slowly around her or not. She has to get in those hours because she's so determined. Her eyes are on the prize. Otherwise, she's a show-off and it's like, oh, look at me.
Right.
I am better than everybody else in a way that you find impossible to quantify. So I'm going to pull focus all afternoon.
Or maybe she just likes ice skating and got good at it. And she still likes it.
Maybe. No, okay. Go early in the morning.
Okay. Well, yeah, I didn't see it. You would have seen her eyes. I can't judge.
I can't tell. I genuinely can't tell.
Okay.
But she had much more professional looking skates on than I did.
Right.
If I had those skates, it'd be different. I'd be twirling around to Gloria.
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, God. I've been yammering on for ages and I've barely even started yet. It's because I'm making the most of my new life out of self-isolation.
Yeah, what have you been doing with your freedom apart from going ice skating? So I did message you yesterday at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you said, oh, well, I'm still in my dressing gown.
I sent you a photo to prove it, didn't I? No, although yeah, like yeah. 9 days in isolation and what do I do on my first free day to myself? Stay in and don't get dressed.
No.
So I went to the doctor today. In fact, I'll tell you something weird happened, but I'll tell you that in a bit. I also went to the barber today.
Oh yeah, what, hair or beard or both?
Both. The barber said to me at some stage, "Have you got any plans for any trips this year?" And I said, "No, not as of yet. We'll see how it goes." And he said, Yeah, I've been thinking the same thing. I'll have to see where I'll let me in without a vaccine.
Oh.
It's not what you want to hear, is it? I'm trying to not be judgmental.
But that was his way of telling you as well, by the way.
Yeah.
It was completely engineered because he wanted to get the conversation
exactly
going.
Exactly that. Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah, I can't feel okay about being judgmental because I read a thing last week about, you know, people's reasons aren't always as simple as you think they are. And I've been trying to have a bit more empathy, but I think if somebody is desperate to steer the conversation onto the fact that they're not vaccinated or that they don't like vaccines, then it's okay to judge them.
And did you bite?
No,
did
I just
take up the...
I just carried on as if he hadn't said it.
Oh, well done. Yeah. That would have driven me mad.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so here's what I do have to tell you.
Okay.
Right? The worst thing that has ever happened to anyone happened to me on Sunday.
Okay.
I took Jean to the theatre to see a children's production.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say what it was because it wasn't good.
Okay, that's very fair of you.
To the extent that about halfway through the first half, Gene needed to go to the toilet and he couldn't hang on till the interval. So we had to do the uncomfortable thing of leaving a theatre during the performance. And I really, really hoped that they wouldn't let me back in until after the interval.
Right, oh, that bad, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, when we arrived at the theatre, there's a little bit of a queue to get in because the first thing you have to do when you get in is sanitise your hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hand sanitising station there. And I press the top of the thing. It's like a soap dispenser thing where you press it down and it comes out, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Press it down. Nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Press it again a bit harder. Nothing happens. Press it again, harder, firmer, keep it compressed for longer. Nothing happens.
Okay.
What do you do at that point?
Give up.
It's probably what I should have done. I pretended that some sanitizer was on my hands and then pretended to do the wiping my hands thing, right?
Yeah.
That's not the worst thing.
Okay.
The worst thing is the man behind me in the queue then says, I think there's actually a sensor underneath. So he has seen me pretend to sanitize my hands. And rather than just like nudge whoever he's with or, and then tell people, I saw a guy pretend to sanitize his hands. I don't know if he thought he was being helpful, but he wasn't. I mean, it was just a humiliation.
This is terrible.
So what I did was, when we left to go to the toilet, I then went to a local snooker hall, got two snooker balls, took my sock off, put them inside the sock, waited for the man outside the theatre and then bludgeoned him repeatedly with my weapon.
Obviously.
I don't have a violent impulse. I know you do, but I don't have a violent impulse like that.
No, that wasn't like you to say that. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fantasy element. I want you to say at the end, did you sense that?
All right, what have the Drifters been getting in touch with, Annabelle?
Okay, first one is from Tim. He says, there were 300 people where I worked and one of them was leaving. Let's call him Rob. I sat next to him for a few months and he was a nice guy. So when he was leaving, I thought, I've hidden too many times to avoid saying awkward goodbyes to people I really genuinely like. So I'm going to make an effort this time. I get up to go over to him. He seems to be just standing there. So great. I walk straight up to him, then suddenly realise I have no idea what to say. I know, I think. I'll just shake his hand and say goodbye, which I do. He turns awkwardly and says, thanks, mate. And I think, well, this is going fine. Why do I make such a fuss about saying goodbye? And it's then that I noticed he was in the middle of his goodbye speech and I was the only person in the office not listening to the speech. And I'm now standing there just shaking his hand. And I'm still shaking his hand and looking at everyone in the company and they're all looking at me. So I mentioned 300 people work in my office. So I just turn back to him, say goodbye, let go of his hand and then walk out of the office, down the stairs, out of the door of the building and straight into oncoming traffic. Oh, Tim.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
I think he was joking.
No, I know. I thought, oh God, I was slow on the uptake there and I didn't get it immediately, but I was hoping that I'd styled it out in much the way I hoped that I'd styled it out with the hand sanitizer, but obviously I didn't manage it with that either.
I thought I needed to add, and it's my ghost now that's writing this email. And this is from Mark, who lives in Australia. Australia is a perilous setting for any drifter. The default character for most Aussies range from warm and charming to bombastic larrikins, but very few would be described as aloof or indifferent to strangers. This is amplified by living in a rural town where people greet each other with a g'day as they pass in the street and strike up conversations in supermarket queues. Despite my drifterish tendencies and training from growing up in London, eyes down, hands in pockets, I enjoy this sense of community and can cope in most circumstances. However, there are some contexts that really ramp up the pressure on a socially awkward whinging pom who'd often rather be left alone. As Annabelle and Jeff have explored, parenthood can thrust drifters into dangerous situations that push them to their limits. Small talk at school functions and being assigned roles within sporting clubs are all rich veins to be tapped for other stories. But the worst by far is anything to do with water. Swimming and water sports are part of Aussie life, and as a father of three Australian children, I have taken each of them to swimming lessons since they were 6 months old. Thankfully, they are now all at the point in their swimming training where I am no longer needed in the water, so I get to sit at the side of the pool, staring at my mobile phone and avoiding eye contact with other parents who are casually chatting, like being polite and interested in other people is normal, and I'm the strange one. The time spent in the water with an infant during lessons is filled with many mortifying moments. Hauling my pasty dad bod in and out of the pool while the muscle-bound Aussie dads, looking like the cast of Magic Mike, appear to levitate their Adonis-like frames was a weekly sufferance. One particular instant remains the most mortifying, however, and triggers flashbacks each time I return to the pool. Swimming lessons in Australia tend to take place in purpose-built venues rather than public baths. The swim school my children attend has a range of different size pools separated into blocks, with over 20 swimming lessons taking part simultaneously. Pre-COVID, on a Saturday morning, the venue would have over 200 children and parents going in and out constantly for lessons on rotation, and the atmosphere was congenial as parents watched their kids in their lessons. My son was three at this stage, and even then has a loud, rascalish personality that belies his parentage. I was in the water with him, and the other children and their parents had been in the same swim class since the children were 6 months old, so we'd all become part of their routine, seeing them each Saturday morning. There had even been a few birthday party invitations where we'd met outside of the swimming pool. At the 15-minute mark of the lesson, the children had a sweet routine of climbing out of the pool, holding hands in a line and walking around the pool together before jumping back in and swimming back to their parents. It was a showcase moment when the parents applauded their bravery for jumping in. On this occasion, something was wrong, however. While I was still in the water and he was in the line about to walk around the pool, my son broke away from his friends and ran back to me. Leaning over the pool, he whispered, "I need a wee." A good parent would have climbed out of the pool at this point, but feeling the eyes of the other parents on me and not wanting to reenact the sea life whale show an extra time when I didn't need to, I committed a social faux pas that many parents will be guilty of. I whispered back, "Just go in the pool." My son told me, "I can't," but I reassured him, "It's fine. All the other boys and girls do it. Don't worry." Wanting to end the conversation and needing to swim to the other end of the pool to meet him, I turned my back ready to swim away, presuming he'd rejoin the parade and walk around the pool. He didn't. It was at this point that a plume of liquid shot past my right ear and began to splash into the pool in front of me. Aghast, I turned around to see my son with his swimming trunks around his ankles, urinating into the pool while standing on its edge. The whole place went silent and time seemed to stop. Attempting to inject my son with the same sense of shame and self-regret that has crushed me for 40 years, I asked desperately, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" My Australia-born son shouted back gleefully, "Doing a wee in the pool like you told me to. It's okay, Dad. You said everyone does it." He pulled up his trunks and readjusted himself and joined his friends walking around the pool in a line led by a scowling swimming instructor. The rest of the lesson is a blur, but I do remember an elaborate show of testing the pH levels by one of the staff and an excruciating conversation with the manager at the side of the pool while I was dripping wet and shivering while wearing only my swim shorts.
Oh, that is spectacular.
I love that so much.
So wonderful. Send us your story, please. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle?
Yes.
I'm sitting here and I'm ready for another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult.
So, as promised, at the end of last year, I'm going to talk about the time I was on Friendly TV. Now, firstly, this was a very long time ago. I think it was 2003 when I was 27 and I was working on the Pete and Jeff Breakfast Show.
We're really raking up the old stories, aren't we, from back in the day. My Dancing on Ice, your friendly TV.
Yes. So that's when it was. Now what friendly TV was. So it was a now defunct cable TV channel. According to Wikipedia, it launched in 2003 and, I quote, received immediate criticism for its poor content. It had a lot of interactive shows where people text in. And I think this information in itself is painting a very clear picture. I've got some names of programmes on it for you. Cash House, Stash the Cash, Vegas 24/7, Live Roulette, Gamer Web and Bikini Beach. Apparently, I didn't know this, but I read it today. In the early days, it didn't have adverts, but it did have breaks. So instead of the adverts, the camera used to zoom in on a TV screen where they put up stuff like results of polls. Like it was very low budget. Now, I didn't work on this channel, but I was a guest on an evening show called Girl Talk. And this, I'm sure, was all down to you, Jeff. Have you got any memories at all of how it happened?
No, I don't remember anything about it. If unprompted, I would never have remembered that this happened. But when you said,
"Oh, really?"
But when you said friendly TV, it has. I've got okay. the vaguest of memories.
So from memory, I think that you stumbled across this channel one day and found it funny.
I'll tell you what it was. There was a period. It was a brief period. It was, but a golden era where channels started filling airtime with quizzes and money making premium rate phone in question things, right? And it was a combination of very, very inexperienced people, low budget, and having to fill. That was just glorious. And there was, because you know, channels used to just close down overnight, and then they realized they could make money by doing these premium rate games where people called in and answered questions. But a lot of the time no one was calling in, or the presenters had to drag it out to get the maximum number of calls before they gave away a prize.
Yeah.
And they didn't have anything to work with. There were no production values. And I just love that. I just love watching people flounder like upturned turtles, desperately sort of reaching inside of their souls and then just pulling out whatever's there in order to fill the time.
For some people, because of the job that you're in, that would be their worst nightmare, and therefore they couldn't bear to see someone else doing it. But so I like the fact that it used to tickle you.
Well, I know, maybe that's partly why it tickled me, some kind of relief it wasn't me. But what I really like about it is you really get to see who's underneath the veneer.
Right.
Because they'd always start and they'd be really upbeat and TV presentery.
Yeah.
And then they just have to fill. And the weird stuff that comes out of people when they have to fill.
Oh, God. I got this, a desperate urge to watch it now. Desperate urge.
Yeah.
So you liked it, went through a phase of liking it. And I think you thought it'd be funny if I went on it and then spoke about it the next morning on the radio show.
Does that sound right? That sounds how those sorts of things went.
Yeah. So it was me. Then it was also Becky, who worked on the show for a bit, and Emma, who worked on Rock and Roll Football and also reception. Now, my memories, as I say, are very hazy, but here is what the billing was of Girl Talk, which I saw online today. I think it was on between 9 and 11 at night. And this is the quote I found from the listings. "Let the girls get you in the mood for tonight's edition of Babe Cast. So come on, open the Lambrini and share a curry. It's Girl Talk."
So is that saying you were warming people up for soft porn?
Yes, essentially. And I definitely remember there being a curry, and I also remember it was not served up in bowls. It was just laid out in those plastic takeaway containers, and it was very oily. It was like 50% oil. There was definitely wine as well, and I remember there being shots, but I also remember not wanting to do them. So I kept trying to hide them, forgetting I was on TV and therefore it was impossible to hide them. I also remember that people could text in and that about 50% of the texts were from men with foot fetishes who wanted to show them our bare feet. Now, I tried to see if there was anything online, partly to jog my memory and partly so that I could then employ one of those agencies that manipulates the internet so all your bad stuff disappears. And I had to do some quite deep digging, and I had to use that Wayback Machine Internet Archiver. But I did find a long deleted Virgin Radio webpage about that fateful night.
Oh, wow.
Along with photos someone had taken of their TV screen.
Oh, like, wow.
Either you or the producer. First thing I noticed, that on the screen is a number to text and then a message. Then it says the message costs a pound. Pound. People are texting a pound. And then at the bottom of the first picture, there is one of these texts displayed. I'll read it to you now. It was from Mandy649. Is it just me that feels horny at work sometimes? I mean, that's the kind of text you were getting. On the next
that
photo...
That was clearly made up by a producer to try and elicit a similar text like that.
Of course it was. Or just to get us girls talking about how we feel at work sometimes, which I'm sure that I was very readily responsive with. You know what I'm like? Oh, yeah. I'm like Abby Titmus, always popping off to the toilet. Like, you know what? I seem to remember her saying something like that at the time. Anyway, next photo, the text is, are you all single? Can you say hi to Ben? And I can see all the curry and the booze laid out in front of us in the pictures. There's also a female presenter, and I can't remember her, but I do remember her guiding the conversation. And I messaged Becky about it earlier, and her only memory was lots of awkward silences. And I think she's definitely right there. It was terrible. Eating an oily curry out of plastic containers while men pay a pound to ask to see your bare feet. That is such a low point. It's like your worst ever night out being broadcast on television.
Don't you think, God, I wish I could get a pound from a pair of bare feet these days.
I probably do it. But the worst of it is, this was kind of the innocent days of friendly TV. By the time it closed in 2010, there was all like adult sex chat telephone stuff. It went very seedy. But there was a period when I didn't realise the way it had gone, and I'm still telling people I've been on friendly TV, and they were like, oh, really? So, yeah. Anyway, if you want to see the photos... I have contacted one of those internet agencies that erase your online pass. So you can't, sorry.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, a few little things for you. Number one is... I sometimes just have to accept that I am a man of a certain age.
Okay.
And I try not to be stuck in my ways. I try to be open to the modern world. I think I do a reasonably good job. But I am also the product of the time in which I was born. So, for example, the other day I was on the bus and I saw a man of a similar vintage to me, and he was wearing quite flamboyant nail varnish. So immediately it caught my eye and I thought, oh, good for him. But at the same time, it caught my eye enough for me to like look, do a double take, because it's not something I'm used to seeing.
Mm.
So my question is, how can I convey with a look that I'm one of the good ones? I don't think there's anything bad about it. I think he can wear what he wants. And I dream of a world where that wouldn't even register. However, I am of an age where I see that and it just say, oh, there's a thing. Oh, isn't that nice? It's 2022. Difficult thing to convey with a facial expression.
Have you ever tried a thumbs up?
Do you think that's the way to go?
Yeah, for you, I think definitely, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try it next time. I'm just going to practice it on you. This is what I'd look like, just giving somebody a thumbs up across the aisle of the bus. What was wrong with that?
I'll see if I can think of anything better. I'll come back to you.
What was wrong with that?
To be honest, a lot of it was... I'm guessing you're wearing a mask on the bus, but a lot of it was down to the accompanying smile. And I'm not saying it was a bad smile. It was just in combination with the, oh God.
Okay. Okay, we're back on the stuff about my smile being creepy.
No, you've got a lovely smile.
We know that, haven't we? This has long been established.
I think your genuine smile is really nice. Your fake smile isn't, and that was a fake smile.
Okay.
I think I got out there.
Yeah,
right?
I think
that
so.
That's good. Yeah.
All right. Next thing I was going to mention is, I've had a burgeoning friendship with somebody I've got to know a little bit through work a while ago. Mm-hmm. And quite recently, we took it to the next level by going for a walk together.
Oh, okay.
Lovely, right?
It's really nice.
Lovely. And then I sent him an effusive email saying how much I'd enjoyed the walk and following up, you know, just, you know, when you maybe mention a TV show or a podcast and then you maybe include a link to it in the email, or you've been talking about where you got your sweater from and you, you know, when I say sweater, jumper from.
Yeah.
So you maybe like send them a link to that. Or mm-hmm. say, I could always send you one of those jumpers. What size? Anyway, the point being, I send this effusive email, kind of saying how much I'd enjoyed it. And he's, I'd say my email was probably three paragraphs in total.
Okay.
He sent back a perfectly positive reply, one paragraph.
And you're worried that it doesn't equal yours, so he didn't enjoy it as much.
Yes. What I'm asking is the mismatch in length of reply always indicative of something else? If you really want to make sure that you match somebody in email form or any communication, somebody texts you about something, do you then have to text back the same length? Otherwise, it's some kind of snub or power play.
This had never even occurred to me. I think I can be guilty of someone sending a 4 or 5 paragraph email and I will send just one line, like a very, very friendly, totally equal in terms of gushingness, but it will just be one line. And now I feel awful. I didn't realise I was supposed to match it. Like, some of us aren't that great at writing emails.
Oh, I hate
I'd be there
it.
All day.
Me too. Sarah will sometimes say, what's the matter, Sarah? I'm just so stressed. I've got to reply to some emails.
Yeah.
So I have to think about the subject line. I've got to think about what to write, what the pleasantry. We talked about this, didn't we? But
what
the pleasantry is and all that. Whereas she'll just sit down, write what comes into her head in much the same way as if she goes into a cafe and they speak to her. She just says what comes into her head.
Oh, right.
And then they say,
it.
Yeah, and not overthink it.
Mm.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think two-thirds is the rule.
So you've got to match it by two-thirds.
At least.
Oh, this is going to weigh heavily on me. I didn't even know this was a thing. And now it's another thing to add to my list. Okay. All right.
Final thing, went to the doctors this morning. When I got there was somebody ahead of me at the reception desk, some waiting. And I'm not eavesdropping, I'm not straining to hear, but I hear the receptionist say, okay, so what I'll do is I'll text you the email address and then if you email me, and I don't even know what she asks him for, but because I've tuned out by that point, but that's the bit of the conversation I hear.
Mm-hmm.
He then leaves the surgery. I get to the front of the queue. I give my name. She says, take a seat. And I'm sitting there waiting for the nurse. As I'm sitting there waiting, I get a text from the doctor's surgery with an email address saying, here's the email address. Thanks, Beryl. And it instantly becomes apparent what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
She sent it to beat me by mistake.
Yeah.
Now, the waiting room isn't full, but there are quite a few people around and it's relatively small. So I wait until she's free and I discreetly sidle up to the desk and I say in as quiet a voice as possible, oh, just to let you know, I think this text I've just received was perhaps for the gentleman who was before me in the queue. And she looks mortified and a bit angry at me.
Angry? You've done nothing wrong.
I think I've embarrassed her.
Well, what are you supposed to do?
Exactly. I've spoken
as
lower voice.
Let this poor gentleman not get the email address.
Well, I wonder if that's what I should have done. This is like my mini quandary to lead into Quandary Corner.
Oh, no, I think you did 100% the right thing. If you'd have bellowed it from the other side of the room, oi, Beryl, like that, That's not good.
No.
But sidling up.
I did sidle. It was a real sidle.
I can tell. Lowered voice.
Yeah. Hushed tones, I would describe it as.
Then no one would have heard it. Although everyone's straining to hear at the doctors, aren't they? Because you're desperate to know. If everyone's as nosy as me, you're desperate to know what everyone's in for. So everybody would have been straining to hear. Mm. Yeah, maybe you should let it lie.
I should have said, can I have a quiet word in private?
Oh, God. No.
No, you're right.
She'd have said, why? No, why? That's not something we do around here. Sorry, I'm a receptionist. We don't do private words. Mm. Oh, what? I know what you should have done.
Yeah.
A note, given her a note.
I should have done.
You should have slipped her a note.
Yeah, I should have been carrying it. Oh, I should have wrote a note in my phone and then handed it to her.
Yeah.
Which then would have looked like I was committing a bank robbery.
Yeah. She would have pressed the red button under the table. Yeah, maybe not. Oh, it's impossible to answer.
I know.
I just blame Beryl, really. She should be more efficient.
Yeah. Okay, then shall we do actual quandary corner now at the GLAP clinic
first
here
one.
In Problematic?
Sorry, first one from Chris.
Chris?
Yes. I started seeing someone back in May after many years of being single. She's wonderful. Ooh. And I've even introduced her to the podcast, which she relates to.
What?
Yes, she's one of us.
Oh, I love her. You should marry her.
Yeah. Of course, we mention each other to close friends and family in the relatively early stages of our relationship. However, our quandary is this. How do you mention a new relationship to workmates and more casual acquaintances? I'd like these folk to know, but it seems like almost showing off to announce it as news. How do I do it? Should I casually mention doing something with my girlfriend at the weekend and act like I'd already talked about her? Or do I have to wait until getting married or having a kid to have something newsworthy? Sarah, on the other hand, says she'd be quite happy not to mention it as she doesn't like work folk knowing all her personal business, but then worry she'll look like a total weirdo, her words, if she's living with someone or something has never mentioned them before. What's the rule? Thank you, Chris and Sarah. I totally get this.
Well, we talked about it a few weeks ago, didn't we? The announcing of good news feels weird.
Mm-hmm. So how do you tell work colleagues without telling them?
Because I think I am somebody who would struggle a bit with this, and you are somebody who would, it'd just be impossible for you. Like, because I've said many times, you could have saved a busload of children from falling into a canyon on the way over to record the podcast, and you wouldn't mention it.
I would. But yeah, I can.
And then it'd come up like 6 weeks later on ways in which I'm not a fully functioning adult.
Well, I'd say I was just saving it. Sorry.
No, but I think you specifically really struggle with anything where you're kind of making yourself the centre of attention in a certain way.
Unless these are people who they're with me from day one and they know I'm going on a date.
Yeah.
And like I'd tell them everything.
Yeah.
Unless they're those people, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah, if it's those people, you'd be like one of those Sex and the City women.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm all over it. Yeah. But in that context, I find it possibly you could have phone conversations that anything that involves me overtly telling people. So I'd maybe get Sarah to phone the office and talk to her on the phone, be like, all right, babe, see you. I don't know. I'll wash the bed sheets tonight. I don't know, something that would indicate a relationship.
I just feel like you have to wait for it to come up, right? You just need somebody to say, oh, what did you do at the weekend? You say, oh, I went to the pictures with my girlfriend. And then they'll say, girlfriend, how long has that been going on? And then you say, and then they'll spread it around.
Because you can't make an announcement.
No.
You can't say,
so
guys, got some news, got a girlfriend.
Yeah.
You're right. Wait till it comes up naturally.
Yep. Yeah, don't try and shoehorn it in.
And if it doesn't come up naturally before children, marriage, living, moving in together, etc., then so be it.
Yeah, so be it. The worst thing that's going to happen is somebody will find out at some point and say, ooh, you're a bit of a dark horse, aren't you?
And who wouldn't want to be described as being a dark horse?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great. We solved that. Next is from Justine, who is just outside Vancouver, in brackets, Canada. I drove with my dog to a park about 40 minutes away so he could meet and play with his best friend. I don't have kids. This was our equivalent of a play date.
Yeah.
We usually meet at a great off-leash park near my house, but limited daylight and being back at work meant we had to meet somewhere more in between our homes. My friend and her dog arrived and we proceeded to walk around the outer paths, chatting and trying to keep warm while our dogs wrestled and ran, completely immersed in their play. We met a few dogs and people on our way and eventually crossed paths with a small group of dogs and owners. Our two dogs engaged them and started playing in the group. All was good. Everyone was having fun. After a while, most of the other dog owners wandered off towards the parking lot as it was getting darker, and we were left standing with one young man and his dog, who was playing with my dog mostly, ignoring my friend's dog a bit. The young man might have been even a teenager. I'm not totally sure of his age. He was chatting somewhat awkwardly about his dog and their play. He was also standing just a little too close to me. When I moved away a bit, he stepped forward and got too close again. This happened at least 5 times in 5 minutes. He was easily within the 3-foot comfort zone required for personal space, and he was a total stranger. My friend's dog was a little left out of the game, and I could see my friend was getting a bit irked, as she wanted her dog to burn off some steam, and I wanted to walk our two dogs away without being rude so they could play together. Wordlessly understanding that we both had the same goal, my friend and I started to walk up the path and called our dogs after us. And to my dismay, the guy invited himself along and walked with us. He was still walking too close to me, to the point where I was walking off the side of the path to regain some personal space. It was making me so uncomfortable, but he wasn't being overtly rude or anything. So what on earth could I do? After another 5 minutes or so of walkiness, in desperation, I pulled out my phone and quickly texted, "I can't shake this kid off," to my friend, followed by, "He's too darn close." She read my messages and we exchanged horrified glances as the guy continued talking about the dogs and the snow and the weather, completely oblivious. It was clear he was not trying to be rude or creepy. He just didn't understand social norms or personal space or something. We walked a little further. It was excruciating. And then suddenly my friend piped up and said, "Hey, hope you don't mind. It's just with COVID and everything. I mean, she and I are friends and in a bubble and we don't want to walk too close," or something along those lines. I nearly died of embarrassment. But to our relief, the guy said, sounding somewhat offended, unsurprisingly, I'll go the other way then. He called his dog and turned to walk in the other direction. I wanted the earth to swallow me right there. My friend and I carried on, our dogs totally absorbed with each other again. We discussed what had happened. She was just as mortified as I was and said she couldn't think of another way to get rid of the poor guy. I agreed I had no better plan. Was what she said the best solution, or is there a better way to get rid of fellow dog walkers when you've had enough?
Oh, God, I wish Sarah was here because she is an expert at just shutting people down, whereas... I mean, I feel like I'd still be with that guy if it was me.
It can be a problem. I mean, this has happened to me before to some extent of being out walking the dog and people want to have conversations and the conversations don't tend to be much more interesting than dog breed, dog age, that kind of thing. And you kind of want to get away and it can be difficult, especially if you're walking in the same direction.
Yeah. And especially if you get the sense that their direction is aimless. They're just out for a walk. So wherever you go, they'll change direction.
It's definitely happened to me before that someone has said, "Oh, I'll come along with you." In fact, once, this was shocking, a lady, it's when my dog was a puppy and he's playing with another dog, she said, "I always find that I meet other people on these dog walks and the dogs play well together, but I'll never see them again. So should we exchange numbers?"
Horrendous. Horrendous.
I know.
So basically the question is, how do you get rid of somebody in an outdoor setting?
Yes. When you're just sort of doing an aimless dog walk.
Yes.
And so are they. You can't say, "Well, I wanted to walk alone today," or "I wanted to walk." It's very difficult.
Because you've already let it go on too long.
Mm-mm.
Because if you're just at the point at which you'd exhausted the, "Oh, how old is he? Oh, don't they play nicely together?" If you'd then said, "Anyway, it was nice talking to you," that's the only get out point. If it goes beyond that.
If you miss that, you're stuck forever.
Yeah, I think you are stuck forever.
I find that I pretty much always have my headphones in. So
yes, but there are ways out of it if you're alone. But if there are two of, this is what was making it impossible.
Yes.
It's your saying to the kid who's come up to you in the playground and wants to join in your gang, we don't want you in our gang.
Oh, don't.
That's what you're saying. And I know because I've been that kid.
So what's the nicest way to talk to that kid then? There isn't one, is there?
No, unless, I mean, I think you just had to abort the dog walk at that point.
You have to say, right, well, we're going now then.
Yes, right.
And then you have to actually go because you can't risk bumping into them.
As soon as you're in the car, you text your friend and say, okay, we're going to rendezvous at this location in 5 minutes.
Okay.
But this off-leash thing makes it difficult because I'm guessing it sounds like Canada's the same as America where parks aren't just, dogs can't just be off the lead in the park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think a lot of places are like that. So I remember when, you know, I'd spend time in New York or Stockholm for that matter. Like you'd have these really quite depressing small areas where dogs could be off their leads. Whereas here, and like in Germany as well, I think, I mean, speaking with very limited experience, but the default is dogs can be off the lead in a park. And then there might be some areas where dogs aren't allowed. But in other places, it's the other way around. Like in Central Park in New York, you can take your dog in, I think, before a certain time in the morning, say 8 o'clock. Yeah. And then after that, they have to be on leads or in these like really little pens, paddocks. So
I did not know about that.
No, so that makes it complicated. So they've gone to the one off-leash park. And it's not like they can, it sounds like perhaps it's not easy to just drive to another one of similar quality.
I think what we're coming to the conclusion is you couldn't have done anything better than the friend.
Well, you let it go on too long.
Yeah.
Nip it in the bud early on. But you weren't to know that this guy was going to outstay his welcome.
No. It was a freak circumstance.
Yes.
And I think you handled it the best you could. But if it happens again, try and get out earlier.
Yep. There we go. Okay. All sorted. And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening. If you have a story for us, if you have a quandary for Quandary Corner, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Manon the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. Hopefully next week Annabelle will be in the same room.
Hope so.
Oh, actually, I have to go to... It doesn't matter. I have to go somewhere next. But it shouldn't affect the episode. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Something just occurred to me. So I'll finish this week's episode by saying, I'm doing a wee in the pool like you told me to. Okay, this comes from Adam, who says, Dear Jeff and Annabelle, my lovely partner, Antonia, has been listening to your podcast since just after you started and is now completely caught up. Antonia, thank you so much for sticking with us. I have no idea why you would do that, but it's a wonderful thing. It's her 40th birthday on the 17th of January, 2022, and I was hoping that maybe you'd be so kind as to give her a podication. I attach my well-deserved 5-star review of the podcast, if such bribery is acceptable and helps swing things. Well, it absolutely does, yes. We'll do anything for a nice review, won't we, Annabelle?
Anything at all. I'll show you my feet.
Either a nice review or a pound.
Yeah, pound would be nice.
She experiences a lot of long-lasting mental associations, as do I. I sometimes wondered if it's an OCD-related thing. Either way, Antonia refers to them as brainworms. Oh, that's good. As they're the brain equivalent to earworms. That's really good. Some of hers are whenever someone mentions not liking the weather, having whether weather be cold or whether the weather be hot, whether the weather, whatever the weather, whether we like it or not, run through her head. If she strokes a cat, she always has a clip of Data from Star Trek saying she's a good cat and a pretty cat playing in her head. And likewise, if someone says a thing is good and nice, she hears Jerry Seinfeld say, really, really, very good and nice. It's a great episode. She's an absolute delight of a human being and partner. Yours kindly, Adam. I love those associations. They're all so good.
Mm, yeah.
Well, happy 40th.
Mm.
Antonia, we are delighted to have had you with us for all these episodes. And I hope you have a fantastic birthday. I hope that you are lavished with just the right amount of attention. I hope everything goes to plan. And do you hope anything? I feel like I'm hogging the hoping.
I hope 40 is a good birthday and a good year.
Yeah, I liked 40. I'd say 40 was my best year.
Oh, best year of your life?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd have to have a few weeks to think about my best year. I'll get back to you on that.
Like, in some ways, Jean being born was the best overall, but it's not just unreservedly the best because you're tired and exhausted and it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's a joy like no other joy, but it's all the other stuff as well. Whereas I think the year I turned 40, especially from not long after I turned 40, was just a great year.
Good. Uh-huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I hope it's the same.
Yeah. Then 41 I found, you know, was one of the worst.
Hmm.
I hope that bit's not the same for you, Antonia.
Yeah.
All right. Happy birthday to Antonia, 40th. I like 40 a lot. 50, I'm not sure what I'm going to think of that yet.
Mm-hmm. That's ages away. Don't think about that.
Yeah, it's a whole, 18 months for me? Not quite. Happy birthday to Antonia from Adam. And if you would like a podcation, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.